The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Morning, Glory America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. It's August 20th. I'm Hugh Hewitt, live inside the Beltway. The lead story at the Washington Post this morning is chaos persists at Kabul airport, imperiling Afghanistan evacuation effort. At the Wall Street Journal, the lead story is internal State Department cable warned of Kabul collapse. There will be plenty of time later to focus on what went wrong in the 7 months of the Biden administration that have come and gone so quickly. There will be ample time. Right now, there's an attempt to divert attention to any other story. I can't even believe Vice President Harris is leaving for Singapore tonight. The President of the United States will speak at 1 o'clock this afternoon, East Coast time, as criticism of the response mounts at almost every turn. An unbelievable video, which you'll find on my Twitter feed, of a family hoisting an infant who can't be weeks old, maybe 2 months old, over the wire at Karzai International Airport into the hands of a Marine is as bleak and awful a video as you can imagine. It's like Afghans falling from the plane. So the images are indelible. We just have to pray, and I hope it's happening. I hope there's a giant veiled operation underway. There are reports that both French and British forces have entered the city of Kabul to extract Americans, extract allies, their own people. We have to hope that the rules of engagement are at least as flexible for America's troops and that secrecy is necessary here. If there's an act going on, if in fact we have some sort of Incheon operation underway, by which thousands of Americans are getting out, then I'll be the first to say Oscars all around. I'm glad we were faked out. Operational security is important. But it sure will be an Oscar performance, given, for example, retired Admiral John Kirby, spokesperson for Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin, was on Fox with Brett Baer last night. He said this, cut 31.
Does the U.S. military consider the Taliban an enemy?
Our focus right now, the thing we're working against right now is time and space. And we want to get as many people out of Kabul as we can in as little amount of time as we can. There are no hostile interactions right now between American forces and the Taliban. And we want to keep it that way.
Okay. And we hope it does stay that way. We appreciate you coming on.
I'm not sure we do hope it stays that way. We need to get the Americans out, and whatever it takes ought to be the message. This appears to be a message to the Taliban, we are supine and won't bother you if you don't bother us. Well, we wait for Americans to somehow get to the airport. Punchbowl News, again, Jake Sherman is a very good reporter. Anna Palmer reports that administration officials are mad at the media because they're overestimating the number of Americans trapped in Afghanistan. Many have already left, blah, blah, blah. Again, maybe it's a head fake, but Clarissa Ward, a CNN reporter, of course, who's just remarkably brave, said this, cut 26.
Is the panic, the lack of clear information, the rumor mill is in overdrive, there's hysteria, you have Taliban fighters with whips, with guns, you have U.S. and U.K. soldiers who are not allowing people in, you have mixed messaging coming through about what kind of paperwork you need and how you can get on a flight and where you can go. I mean, it is just an absolute mess. And we heard President Biden say yesterday in his comments to ABC News that this is not a failure. And I think a lot of people outside that airport, particularly those taking the kinds of extreme actions we're just talking about, would like to know, if this isn't failure, what does failure look like exactly?
Yeah, that is well put. Senator Tom Cotton on with Harris Faulkner on Fox yesterday, cut number 20.
Harris, President Biden is confronting the consequences of his catastrophic miscalculation, of his horrific execution of the decision to withdraw our troops from Afghanistan. And he is spinning that relentlessly to try to convince the American people that everything is okay, the Taliban's cooperating, they're acting like a civilized government, when nothing could be farther from the truth. In that ABC interview, he even had to be pressed to acknowledge that, yes, perhaps we'll stay on the ground past August 31st. But if our government can't even say how many American citizens we have, what's going to stop Joe Biden from rolling up things and flying out on August 31st with thousands of American citizens left behind? Let me just say this, Harris. A lot of people have been speaking this week about comparisons to Saigon in 1975. Mm-hmm. What increasingly worries me is the scenario of Tehran in 1979, when 52 hostages held by the Ayatollah paralyzed American foreign policy for more than a year. Imagine if the Taliban has effective hostage control of thousands of Americans who are stranded in Afghanistan. It would be a catastrophe.
Senator Cotton is reacting to a couple of comments made by administration spokespeople yesterday. Again, Admiral Kirby, this time at the Pentagon podium, saying this, cut number six.
How many Americans, American citizens remain in Afghanistan?
I don't know. The State Department would be a better place to go for an estimate of how many Americans are in Afghanistan or in and around Kabul. That is not a figure that the United States military would know. And I think, as you also know, not every American citizen in another country, there's no obligation that they register their presence and that you can have a perfect, accurate count.
So over to the State Department, where administration spokesman Ned Price said this, cut number one.
We have no numbers. I know that you've mentioned the 6,000, 7,000. You can't break it down. You have said specifically that you have notified all Americans that are trying to get out of state. Is there any rough idea of a number, any characterization that you can give? Clearly, they have given you this information. Clearly, they are trying to get out. Is there any idea of how many Americans are still trying to get out of Afghanistan?
We have been in contact with the Americans who have requested to be repatriated. We're just not in a position to give a number right now. We're more broadly not in a position to offer an aggregate figure because we are putting forward offers to individuals who may be interested in relocating. In some cases, they may opt not to come to the airport. They may opt not to be relocated for whatever reason.
COVID. When you guys pulled people out of different countries during COVID,
Christina,
you would give us a country.
We're talking
right
about
now.
A very different universe here. We're talking about American citizens. We're talking about third country nationals. We're talking about Afghan nationals.
We're talking about American citizens. We're asking about American citizens.
Specifically,
you
American
know
citizens.
How many Americans have contacted you and asked to get out.
There
why can't you tell
some
us?
Kind of list, right? I mean, you have this contact, and if you're making these deals to people who have not specifically reached out to you to say, "Hey, we're trying to get out of here." Is that going to make this a longer process? Going back to her question, is this going to extend this mission further and further past that August 31st?
The president has spoken to this. You've heard from the Pentagon this morning as well. We are going to do as much as we can for as long as we can.
This is incoherence. And that is why, if in fact there's an Incheon option being executed under the veil of secrecy, it will get many Academy Awards because this just appears to be complete executive branch collapse. I would add to this, Ned Price, again, at the State Department, cut number two.
Our imperative is to relocate as many people as quickly as we can. And we've seen the reports of congestion. My understanding is that things are moving quite efficiently at this hour at the airport now. But every report we see of someone unable to reach the airport is of concern.
I can't believe he said that moments before the baby video surfaced. Meanwhile, the president's clips with the transcript was released by ABC at 8 a.m. yesterday. They will not release the film. We can only conclude it's because it's shattering for the president. Indeed, they don't want the audio of this out, the video of this out. Cut number 10.
Still a lot of pandemonium outside the airport.
Well, there is, but look, but no one's being killed right now. God forgive me if I'm wrong about that, but no one's being killed right now. We got 1,000 somewhere, 1,200 out yesterday, a couple thousand a day, and it's increasing. We're going to get those people out.
The number of people being killed around the country stands at 12 that we know of. But, of course, we don't know what's going on in the country. We are seeing from congressional staff, especially the staff of Senator Tom Cotton, relaying reports. There are former Afghan veterans on that staff who tell us and have posted on Twitter about the calls from people, the hunts that are underway by the Taliban. There are and there will be, just as there was in Iran in 1979, Vietnam in 1975, extraordinarily massive numbers of people killed. And again, we just have to hope that this is a giant head fake, that this level of incompetence, disarray, confusion, and incoherence is not consistent with anything we've ever seen from the American government before. And we have to hope it's just a veil thrown over some sort of wonderful surprise operation by America. Secretary of State, former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo will join me later in the program today. I'll continue to bring you updates as we receive them. And I urge you, download the Salem News app, because you're not getting the story that is out there. And follow me on Twitter. I am retweeting every important story that I find, and I believe it's the best source you have. My Twitter feed, actually, for what matters right now. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, joined by Sonny Bunch of Across the Movie Aisle fame, the podcast you should be listening to. Sonny, last night I finally, after watching the baby video and overdosed on news, I watched a movie I haven't watched in 30 years, 1991, The Black Robe, based on the 1985 novel by Brian Moore. And I just had to find something that was completely different, but at the same time, the same. What are you doing in a week when incredibly horrific video images are overwhelming people's Twitter feeds?
Well, you know, it's actually kind of a big week at the movies. It's a weird end of August dumping ground. There's kind of a lot of stuff coming out right now. So, you know, there's some horror. Hugh, you want to watch a horror movie?
Maybe I'll go to a movie this weekend if there's something to divert attention. But I kind of feel guilty doing that. In fact, I wonder if the box office isn't going to suffer dramatically from an international catastrophe. You tell me. I don't know what the historical trend is there, but I remember after 9/11, everything emptied.
Yeah, well, after 9/11 was you know, kind of very specific sort of thing, because everything just shut down in the country for a week or two. I have a hard time judging anything at the box office anymore, because everybody's so worried about so many different things between COVID and everything else. It's always hard to guess. HBO Max has a movie out this week, Reminiscence, that is also going to be in theaters, which stars Hugh Jackman. It's written and directed by one of the showrunners from Westworld. I have no idea if it's any good, because they didn't send out links to screeners for critics. It's in theaters, but they didn't do a Thursday preview, so I couldn't see it ahead of time.
Can I give you a clue on this? Mrs. Hewitt, who loves Hugh Jackman, turned to me after watching the trailer and said, "I'm not seeing that movie, and if I'm not seeing a Hugh Jackman movie, no one's going to see a Hugh Jackman movie." I think the trailer is among the worst I've ever seen.
Well, it's a neo-noir sci-fi type movie. Those are always very hard to market. You know, look at Blade Runner and Blade Runner 2049. It's a tough genre to crack. And you know, Hugh Jackman is Hugh Jackman. I think people prefer him in the Greatest Showman style roles, or even Wolverine, right? As
Oklahoma on Broadway taped.
Right. Or something like that. This is definitely a darker thing. You know, he's played a role kind of like this before, kind of, in The Prestige, which was a Christopher Nolan movie. And that movie did okay, but it was not a huge hit. I'm going to see it. I'm actually going to go see it in theaters tomorrow, or today, I guess, because I just want to go see it in theaters on principle. You know, I don't like doing the HBO Max thing if I can avoid it. I'll let you know how that is next week. In terms of the box office, here's the bottom line is people are able to compartmentalize pretty well. I don't think that the images out of Afghanistan are going to stop people, are going to stop families from going to see the Paw Patrol movie, right? Or whatever. But that said, I mean, the images coming out of Afghanistan are horrible and terrifying, and you know nobody wants to really think about them. But here's a question, Hugh, that I am very curious about is how this will play in movies themselves in, I don't know, 5 or 10 years, right?
What are I was going to ask you the same thing. Yeah, I remember all those years, The Deer Hunter, Apocalypse Now, Platoon. There were many fine works of art that dealt with a national trauma in a variety of ways. But The Deer Hunter, I saw it with two other friends. The three of us walked in. Three of us had completely different reactions to it. I remember that quite clearly, like about 79 or 80. I remember walking out of the theater and the three of us thinking completely different things. So I don't know how Hollywood's going to cope with a collapse of American authority and a disgrace on the country. It seems like it would be pretty attractive filmmaking ground.
Maybe. We'll see. I mean, we were talking about this a little bit last week. Afghanistan has always been a weird war in terms of coverage in the movies. It's a hard conflict to really get into because it's not a big battle sort of war, right? It's not.
Well, there was Lone Survivor, Hurt Locker, Horse Soldiers. We had a number of the book by Jake Tapper, The Outpost became a good movie.
Yeah.
We had a number of movies, but I don't think anyone's done sort of the collapse. I mean, they couldn't have done the collapse. No one foresaw it, certainly not Team Biden.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll have to be a movie kind of like Argo, right? Where
I don't know that.
You've never seen Argo, the Ben Affleck?
No. Oh, yes, I have seen Argo. Yeah,
you have.
Iran hostage crisis movie.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it could be that sort of thing where you have the breakdown and the fear and the terror and the escape.
The good Canadians.
Sort of all wrapped into one.
The good Canadians.
Yes, the good Canadians, exactly.
Well, Sonny, is the Across the Movie Aisle episode being posted? Is there a new one this week?
We did an episode this week on... what did we talk about this week? We actually did an episode on the Vietnam War and its cinematic legacy. As kind of a bonus episode for members. We also talked about Free Guy, which we talked about last week. Look, there is something new in the theaters this week that is not a horror movie. It's not The Night House, which is the horror movie I'd mentioned. There's The Protégé, which stars Samuel L. Jackson, Michael Keaton, and Maggie Q as a bunch of assassins trying to run around and kill each other. It is I'm not going to try to explain the plot because I don't understand the motivation of anybody in this movie. But I do like the fact that it is kind of a old school classic hard R sort of movie. It's a movie with a lot of very intense violence. The dialogue is very adult, shall we say, not necessarily grown up, but adult. And there's some casual nudity at the beginning. I mean, it felt like a movie that would be released in 1992 or so.
Now, so we're back to the Straw Dogs era. Good. Sam Peckinpah lives. Sonny Bunch, I've got to move to some breaking news. So I appreciate it, my friend. Talk to you next week. Follow him at Sonny Bunch on Twitter. And also, please download the podcast, which is Across the Movie Aisle. I think that's important for people to see. Continued reports of chaos outside of the Kabul airport. And that's the most important thing for people to know. We do not have any idea what is going on in Afghanistan. The president of the United States is going to talk to the country at 1 o'clock today. If he doesn't take questions, that will be another indication of I don't know if he's coming back to the White House from Camp David, if he's going to address the nation from Camp David, if he's gone to Delaware. Jim Garrity has raised very good questions in the Morning Jolt. What is up with the president? And this is not the way presidents have ever acted in a crisis. And people are, what is up with Kamala Harris going to Singapore? I don't get that either. The breaking news is that large news organizations reporting progress in their efforts to get journalists out of Afghanistan. The New York Times said that 65 of their colleagues' families, in total 128 men, women, and children, have left Afghanistan. That is very good news. Every American getting out is very good news. I also want to remind you that most important thing is not to fall for Taliban propaganda. Among the most important thing after our citizens and our allies' safety, the Taliban is killing protesters and suppressing protests around the country. Do not believe to any report to the otherwise. The Taliban have, however, been bankrupted. They have no money. And what that means is, of course, they'll shake down every citizen in the world. And the U.S. is finalizing an agreement to send 4,000 Afghans to Colombia. Somehow we're able to do a deal with Colombia, but we couldn't find the SVIV recipients inside of Afghanistan. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo will be joining me later in the hour, so I want to encourage you, or later in the next hour, to stick and stay for that. How bad is the spin from the White House? John Finer, Deputy National Security Advisor, made a video yesterday, Cut 19.
I'm John Finer, President Biden's Principal Deputy National Security Advisor. Here are some things we think are important about what's happening in Afghanistan. First, President Biden has been clear for a long time that the United States went to Afghanistan to get the people who attacked us on 9/11. We accomplished that mission many years ago.
You know, I don't want you to hear this. It's not the way the American government should communicate. They are afraid to send Jake Sullivan, John Finer, Tony Blinken, Lloyd Austin, anybody in front of the press. Jake Sullivan fielded questions and was minced up again because there are no answers, and all of the report, they can't get near the press. They are leaking things to Punch Bowl News and their buddies and in all the various news outlets trying to spin this. It cannot be spun. It is a total defeat in a long war with catastrophic effects for the people who are trapped in Afghanistan, with peril for the Americans who are behind enemy lines, and with long-standing damage to the United States stretching out years ahead, and it did not have to be this way. So, prepackaging a video spin roll by John Finer, anybody else, simply isn't going to cut it, and they know that. ABC News will not release the video of President Biden. There's a reason for that. It is not ratings-driven. They must have had an agreement with the White House that allowed the White House to selectively select portions, but a minimum execution. That's all I can imagine. You know, there is a practice, I've engaged in it myself, where an administration official, in this case, John Bolton, welcomed a group of small reporters forward on the plane when we were traveling with him to Turkey and Israel, would answer all our questions. Then the reporters would retreat, and this is my first time ever doing that. We would collectively assemble a transcript, send the transcript up, and request the ability to use what was off the record on the record. And we would get back approval of what we could use. That is a routine thing on a routine diplomatic mission. This was in the aftermath of agreement with Turkey to withdraw from, to have them entering a part of the country. It wasn't the withdrawal that was subsequent, because it was Bolton, not O'Brien, as the National Security Advisor. That's common. This should not be happening right now. And the White House putting out prepackaged videos with theme music, that's pretty bizarre. It is. They are in campaign cycle mode. They think it's a bad news cycle. It's unbelievable. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt, joined now on a dark end to a dark week by the poet laureate of the Hugh Hewitt Show, Tarzana Joe. Hello, Joe.
Hello. Nice to introduce me as the dark end of a dark week, but you're right, you.
I'm right, yeah.
I feel like for the last 18 months, all of America has been making life or death decisions about what we do every day. And then we look at our leadership, and they're unable to make the most basic one. Unlike so many pundits who pop up on your TVs, I claim to be no expert where I have no expertise. No one asks my counsel or even sends a query to elicit my opinion on some new strategic theory. I've never had to order an advance or a retreat, never marched to victory or suffered a defeat. But if I planned this mission instead of writing verse, I may not have done better, but I could not have done worse. Of all the strangled notion, the one that's twisted tightest is that those who run the country are the best minds and the brightest. Those who make decisions, the state folks and the feds, daily show the country that they're in above their heads. And what is most appalling as they march us straight to hell is the smug presupposition that they think they're doing swell. My father always told me, and he said it rather clearly, if you make a mess of things, apologize sincerely. When you bear the burden and there is no saving face, accept the consequences and exit with some grace. But given who we're dealing with, and as this poem is summing, I think I'm right in saying that I just don't see that coming. Expertise by Tarzana Joe.
Well, I can't disagree with any of that, Joe. Expertise will be posted at TarzanaJoe.com. I'm curious, from your perch as a laureate of usually happy circumstances, weddings and retirements, et cetera, reunions, have you noticed that the country's in kind of a state of shock? Are you in a state of shock?
Yes. I mean, there's survivor's guilt for people who haven't gotten COVID. There's a communal guilt for what's going on around the world. I went out and did my normal day yesterday. I thought, should I really be doing this? What can I do? Is there something I can do to make things better somewhere? There's not even a charity to give to send relief. No one is saying we need to. There's no relief to get it. There's just a powerlessness, and we need to reverse that somehow. We need good news. We need something.
We need expertise. Tarzana Joe at TarzanaJoe.com for the poem. And if you have a poetry need, Tarzana Joe at Reagan.com. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
This morning, I am joined by Secretary of State, former Secretary of State, Michael Pompeo. Mr. Secretary, welcome back. You are a veteran of the CIA as well and of the Benghazi Committee. So I appreciate your joining me this morning.
Good morning. Great to be back with you.
My first question is, do you have any knowledge? Is it possible that we are not actually in the supine position we appear to be in Afghanistan, but that some sort of veiled operation is underway?
No, no, it's not. It is pretty clear that the failure of this administration to properly execute their strategic vision, obviously was to get out of Afghanistan, to execute in a way that secured American freedom, protected us, got civilians out. The blocking and tackling of American security has been an abysmal failure, and I'm sure we'll talk about it, but this has significant ramifications for America's national security, our place in the world, that will be a long time in trying to figure out how to get back from.
We will. Now, when you left office in January, the Doha Agreement was in force. It had not been repudiated. The Taliban broke that not later than March by twice targeting one of the most heavily guarded bases in the country, forward operating base Chapman, quote, a classified U.S. military installation in eastern Afghanistan, wounded 7 civilians outside the base. What would the response of the Trump administration have been to the breaking of the Doha Agreement in that fashion?
Well, can't talk about a specific instance, but I can say this. There were a whole handful of times that the Taliban didn't live up to the commitments that they'd made, not only to us orally, to the folks on the ground, but in the agreement that we signed in February of 2020. There were more than a few instances. In every one of those instances, we responded in the way that we had told them we would respond. We imposed real costs on them. We made clear that the costs that we were imposing on them were connected to their violation of the agreement, right? This is how you execute a deterrence model. They violate the agreement, you respond with a cost that exceeds what they had done. You make clear that you did this in response to their violation, and you tell them, don't do it again. And if you do, we'll come back harder, faster, stronger next time. We did this on multiple occasions, and over the course of the subsequent months, now 11, while we were still in office, we had established a model that made clear to the Taliban that this would be our modus vivendi. And, you know, we shut them largely down. They didn't go take provincial capitals in large measure. They didn't go violate some of the most fundamental things that put Americans at risk. We didn't have a single American killed here. We didn't have a single organized attack on an American in that entire time. Not because of the piece of paper, but because of the understandings were there, and we made clear we would enforce them. This administration pulled the pin on that last stick in the Jenga pile and did nothing when the Taliban responded. Indeed, they withdrew under pressure instead of crushing them in response to pressure.
Would you have advised the president, President Trump, had he been reelected, to withdraw the 2,500 Americans, 5,000 NATO troops, and U.S. air power that ultimately led to the collapse of the Afghan army?
Well, we can talk about the how, but I can talk about the when in great detail. We made clear to the president that his objective, which was to get our boys and girls home, make no mistake about it, President Trump very much wanted to do that. And we did successfully get nearly all of them back. We got down from a little over 15,000 to 2,500. But our wisdom to him each time was to make sure we do this in a way that was conditions-based, that conditions had to be right, that we could protect our allies and friends, get our people home, get all of our equipment out, still conduct the second mission, because the president gave me two missions and our team two missions. He gave us a second mission. The second mission was to make sure that we were in a place that we could continue to reduce the risk that we'd be attacked from that place again, like we were now, goodness, almost just a couple weeks short now of 20 years ago. And so my wisdom to him would have been, yes, sir, we'll work on it. We'll continue to build out the conditions. We'll try to get a negotiated solution between all of the Afghans, not just the Taliban and the government, but the folks in the north, the folks in Herat in the west, everyone. But until we do, until the conditions are right, we have to make sure that we achieve those twin objectives. So we weren't at that place, as you can see. When we left office, we weren't able to get the last 2,500 or so uniformed military folks out of the country. My guidance to the president, my recommendation to the president was to leave what we had there. We had stability at the 2,500-person level, and this administration came in, much like they did on our southern border, and just said, Trump did that, we're going to go rip it up.
Let me ask you about the Washington Post story by Aaron Blake, headline, Trump official scramble for distance from his Taliban deal. The New York Times, Michael Crowley story, quote, Trump's deal with Taliban draws fires from his former allies, in which is quoted H.R. McMaster's, quote, our Secretary of State signed a surrender agreement with the Taliban. This collapse goes back to the capitulation agreement of 2020. According to General McMaster, the Taliban didn't defeat us. We defeated ourselves. Your reaction, Mr. Secretary?
Look, there's a group of folks, and General McMaster is above them, that want to be in Afghanistan forever and believe that that was the only solution. And so when I say wanted to be there, it's not that they wanted to have our kids in harm's way. It's that they believe fundamentally that they had been in this an awfully long time and they saw no other solution to this. When he uses that language, he's just simply wrong. Remember, General McMaster was in charge of the anti-corruption campaign in Afghanistan. But these were missions that just simply failed. They didn't work. We can see that now. And President Trump saw that, too. We had a model that was fundamentally different. There are folks on the Republican side who, all along the way, as we were working to build out a resolution, didn't like what we were doing. Ghani would call them after I left a trip to Afghanistan. President Ghani would call them and demand more American money and more American resources and tell them that it would be the Trump administration that would be the undoing of Afghanistan. It wasn't us. We got this right. You know, and as for the negotiations, this is who you make peace with. You make peace with your adversaries. And we knew this was a long process. Think back to Colombia, right? Years and years of negotiation with the FARC, and ultimately reached an imperfect solution there, too. We were trying to find a way to get all the Afghans at the table to begin the conversation that ultimately Afghanistan will have to go through if they're ever going to get to a more stable place. Now we've gone backwards. We probably lost two decades as a result of the way that President Biden conducted this withdrawal. It was anything but orderly and safe as he had laid out.
Mr. Secretary, the Wall Street Journal's Yaroslav Trofimov reported that the, quote, U.S. pulled its air support, intelligence, and contractor servicing Afghanistan planes and helicopters. This meant the Afghan military simply couldn't operate anymore. Was that the Trump administration's plan as well, or is that the significant difference between the two administrations?
Well, there were multiple differences, differences in the when and differences in the how. I think you're suggesting a difference in the how. Look, we had a theory of the case on the how, which made clear that you had to get the sequencing right. President Trump was clear. I can't tell you how many times we had this conversation where the president would say, great, Take the time you need. Get it right. Make sure we get our civilians drawn down. We had started to do that. I'd reduced the diplomatic presence in Kabul significantly. By the time we left in January of 2020, we knew that there's a day where we would find the conditions right would come, and so we wanted to get the force posture right. And the civilian piece of that was really important. This team just completely forgot that. We knew, too, it was important that the facilities that mattered most, including the primary pipeline for the primary conduit for equipment and people and material to move in and out, Bagram Air Force Base, was a key component of this as well. These folks decided to close that down early without notice to our allies, friends, and our partners in Afghanistan. The tactics and the operational level execution of this have been horrific and will have enormous consequences in the years ahead. So, no, our how of we would execute this was very, very different. And, of course, the when was conditions-based, unlike what President Biden and his team have chosen to do.
Let me ask you one more how question. You spent hundreds of hours in meetings with General Milley and others. Was there ever any discussion that you recall of abandoning more than 10,000 Americans after closing Bagram? I mean, did closing Bagram first before evacuating Americans ever come up? Was that on anyone's radar?
We never talked about leaving any American civilians behind. We were not only going to work to get the civilians out, the American civilians out, we were going to work diligently to make sure we got every stitch. I remember the president talking about making sure you get every nail picked up from that place as best you can. There might have been structure and the like that we would have had to take down and explode and crush before we left. We might not have gotten 100% of that material out, but we were determined to get every American, including every American civilian and every piece of equipment out when the conditions were right for us to go down below that 2,500 number.
I'm sure you've seen the president's speeches and the transcript. ABC will not release the video of his interview with George Stephanopoulos. He's going to speak again, third time's a charm maybe today on Afghanistan. The transcript is not particularly coherent. He says there was no consensus. Then he suggests there was a consensus. Then he suggests that there was a plan and then there was no plan. Right now, he said no one's being killed. People are being killed. He said the falling from the airplane was 4 or 5 days ago. What did you make of that transcript, Mr. Secretary?
It was disheartening to watch America's commander-in-chief, its leader, the person tasked with keeping Americans safe, not only Americans here at home, but responsible for the safety of our people all around the world, including our military. It was hard to watch because it made no sense. It wasn't based on logic. The remarks reflected precisely what you're seeing play out in Kabul and the surrounding areas in Afghanistan today. It was not thought through. It was horribly executed, and it created an even more risk because I must assure you, not just you, Hugh, not just me, but leaders all around the world, our friends, our adversaries alike are watching that as well, and they didn't see a president who had a strategic grasp of the situation on the ground. They didn't see a president who was engaged at the tactical level sufficiently to provide the guidance that needs to be provided. And they didn't see a president who was prepared to defend American values and to impose costs on our adversaries if our American values were at risk.
General Milley, during a briefing for a bipartisan group of senators this week, was asked by Senator Graham if he and the defense secretary would revise an assessment he gave in Congress to June that there is a medium risk of terrorist organizations constituting, Milley said there's a medium risk now of terrorist organizations reconstituting in Afghanistan in less than 2 years. What does that even mean, Mr. Secretary?
Well, I read all the intelligence for not only 4 years, but I had seen the intelligence on this issue in the 6 years prior to that the 4 years prior to that when I was on the Intelligence Committee as well. Well, I can't comment specifically on it. The intelligence community was pretty clear all along that there was risk of collapse of the Afghan government. Remember, for your listeners, this was a corrupt government from the get-go. Ghani was a bad actor. He was perhaps the best of the worst. Certainly, that's what the previous administration to us had thought. But this is no Thomas Jefferson. This is a nation that didn't have a central casting leader who was prepared to actually lead Afghanistan forward. And so the political underpinnings of that stability, put aside for a moment the Afghan National Security Forces' capability to fight, the political underpinnings of security inside of that country were always ephemeral. They were always something that we worried about. When we would talk with our most senior military leaders and they were dealing directly with the Afghan National Security Forces, it was always that political incoherence and the corruption in Afghanistan that concerned them most. And it led the intelligence community to be pretty clear, Hugh, that there was always the risk if the United States didn't maintain its posture there, that they would, the Afghan government would collapse. One last note, there's two pieces to this. One is the military presence, the actual advisors that were on the ground. You'll recall we left combat operations as a technical legal matter before, but we were certainly out on the ground working alongside those Afghan forces. But the second piece is payroll. It was the United States government that was making payroll for the Afghan National Security Forces as well. We always knew that that payroll, and President Trump was clear about this as well, that payroll component, the fact that we were going to be prepared to continue to financially underwrite the Afghan National Security Forces, was also perhaps the central linchpin of American security these last 15 years. And I think when Ghani fled and they saw the Americans pulling out while leaving their own civilians behind, I think the Afghan military said, I wonder if my check's going to clear next week.
Let's talk about those civilians. People have been left behind. Americans, allies, Afghan people. Would President Trump, you have ever allowed the Americans to be stranded this way? And should we use all necessary force and communicate that to get the Americans out? Step one.
Well, you can never talk about the counterfactual. We're not there. And so when someone says, well, what would have happened? It is impossible to answer that question with absolute certainty. I can give you the data and facts from the 4 years that I served. For 4 years, we never allowed that to happen. I can't imagine that our administration would have permitted to happen. These civilians stranded and have our senior leaders stand at the podium and say that the United States doesn't have the capacity to go get them back. What's clear is that we simply don't, under this administration, have the will to go get them. Thanks to other times, right? Wuhan virus spreads around the world. We repatriate 140,000 American civilians from around the world. A different situation, to be sure, but a clear determination that we're going to not let Americans be stuck in Machu Picchu or in Morocco or any place else. We're going to get our people home. We're going to use American power, money, resources to execute that mission. I'm confident that the president today, if he were there, would be demanding that we do that. He'd be demanding that the military execute a plan along with our State Department officials on the ground to identify and then get these folks out and get them back home.
My last question, Mr. Secretary, I know your time is limited. Taiwan, Ukraine, and Pakistan. These are the immediate consequence nations from our collapse. I think it's a very dangerous moment for the first two countries, and I am disgusted with the third. What ought to be the consequences for Pakistan, and what should we be doing for Taiwan and Ukraine on the front lines of America's enemies?
I said yesterday to a group of folks I was with that they asked, what could we do to begin to restore America's credibility in the world? I think a really good start would be to begin delivering significant weapon systems to Taiwan, just as an absolute show that the United States is going to continue to be with them and make clear to the Chinese Communist Party that what happened in Afghanistan is not going to happen in Taipei. What do I mean by that? America is not going to abandon a longtime foe in the face of a threat.
A longtime ally?
The
longtime
Chinese
ally.
Communist Party. Yes, exactly. Abandoned ally in the face of a threat from the Chinese Communist Party. Ukraine, the same. I talked about the fact that it would be a really good time to send a high-level mission to Ukraine and a team there that was prepared to engage in economic activity. You could still make the decision to close down the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, bolstering the Ukrainian people. Those are the kinds of things that a leader could do today to demonstrate to our allies around the world, every country, from the Middle East to Southeast Asia, to demonstrate to them that America will continue to stand with its friends in the face of challenges from our adversary. What happened here, Hugh, is clear. The Taliban pushed. They violated the agreement for sure, but they pushed on America, and America withdrew. When that happened in the Trump administration, when our adversaries pushed on America, America responded with real force. When Qasem Soleimani threatened Americans, we took down that threat. When al-Baghdadi and his ISIS caliphate threatened America, we took down that threat. This administration has taken precisely opposite response, and it calls for American leadership to demonstrate today that we're still going to be with our friends in tough times.
Mr. Secretary, I know your time is limited. Thank you for joining me. Come back often, and thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Hugh. Have a good morning, sir.
I've got to say, the President of the United States, I hope he is listening, needs to take questions today like Mike Pompeo just took questions. and took questions from reporters throughout his tenure as Secretary of State, as Trump took President Trump took questions every day almost. The President of the United States has to stand in front of the American people and answer these questions. The incoherent transcript that was released yesterday by the White House is simply unacceptable.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.